budget, and then now being held accountable to these outcome metrics. So that's really what they're on the hook for. And I think in the past, when we had our managed care organizations, and I was, you know, a part of one, it was very skewed, you know, because we had capitated rates, but those capitated rates were built on your encounter data. So you were, if you managed care really well and you reduced utilization, lower cost, you knew your future payment was going to get hammered. There's no incentives. Well, that's changed. We actually now are talking about a fixed rate of growth. But at the same time, when we talk about the per capita, certainly this is a huge difference when we talk about a block grant versus our per capita cap. I mean, that allows us to look at a per unit cost increase, but then also get our arms around utilization. I mean, in the past, we've just cut the heck out of the per unit cost and balanced the budget, not worrying anything about utilization. So this gives us now, I think, more flexibility to actually have predictability on that 3.4% moving forward.
Thank you.
So one of the things that I don't think we thought through well enough, and I think Karen referred to this yesterday, is what happens when the high deductible meets the accountable care organization or the patient-centered medical home. And I just wanted to call out Oregon for really a very aggressive value-based insurance design, which I see as the alternate pathway to the high deductible. And I wonder if you could say a few words about that. Was there any problem with that with your exchange? Because I've heard that the exchange regs are not welcoming of that. I don't know. Have you had any problem with that?
I think the biggest shift is going to be taking folks who, when we talk high deductible, if you're talking $5,000, $10,000 deductible, well, that's just not going to exist. 2014. So I mean, that's the shift. I think that's where the carriers are
concerned. But even
concerned.
A $2,000 deductible for somebody that's poor and has no money in the bank is going to stop them from going for their chronic disease management care and so forth.
That's right. And I think, and that's why, as you look at what we're trying even to build in our contracts for our public employees, and I think the next step, I mean, we just need to open the doors for our exchange to really get enrollment and get leverage. But then after that, I think absolutely we're looking at how do we qualify, certify health plans that really kind of have all of these attributes.
John Kingsale, the Wakefield Consulting. Since I travel a lot, I come to Princeton to find my Massachusetts friends. Here's my opportunity to suggest something and ask you to speculate on it. As you're aware, after we passed reform in 2006, we passed reform in 2008, we passed reform in 2010, we passed reform in 2012 in the big Massachusetts legislature, and that's what the last one created. And so the expectation is that you will use the bully pulpit for a while, and then when that fails, probably 2014 or 15, we'll have the next round of legislation. So I'm going to suggest that you have, that it will be very dangerous to get mired down into questions about, you know, nursing hours when you have the opportunity to create the vision for a system that would actually work. And I'm reminded of how we built networks in HMOs. We went to the doctors and said, if you don't join, you're going to get national health insurance. And that actually worked for about 10 years. And so you've got an analogous situation. If we don't figure this out, folks, you and Wendy and David and others on the commission, we're going to get that one sentence in the 2015 legislation that's going to say, well, since you violated our increase guidelines, we're now going to have rate regulation. Is the commission able, are you thinking about how do you craft with the private sector, which in Massachusetts has so much potential, a system, an economic system that actually works, if you call that competition or something else, to more than just a bully pulpit, to keep get providers and carriers competing on cost, competing on value?
Well, I think you have it exactly right. And I didn't write that legislation, when it was written, I thought it was a little excessive in terms of the responsibilities it gave to the commission. I'm trying the best I can to minimize the distractions, because I think what you've laid out is exactly right. That we need to keep our eye on the ball. And the ball is to help the delivery system and the financing system encourage more efficient providers. Do a lot of the things that people here are talking about. The good news is, as I said, a lot of them are doing it. And I'm really, you know, one of the reasons why I was willing to take this on is I didn't think it was an impossible job. You know, we have among the most innovative provider groups in the country. As I said, what is it? What's the number? And you look at the Pioneer ACO. I mean, what are we? Three, five out of the so. And you know, as I said, I don't want to boast about whether it comes to medical homes or trying alternative delivery systems or changing scope of practice. So a lot is going on, but you're right, John. Ultimately, our job is to sort of work with the system, make it more transparent. We are going to do what the good market people believe we should be doing, making prices real. I mean, the ones that are going to go out there are going to be what people are actually paying. The quality standards that you've worked so hard on are going to be out there in front. The competition through tiered networks and so on. But we got a long way to go because we have a very skewed delivery system. And so we're going to try.
Uba.
Hey, yes, Uber Weiner. I wonder, Michael, when you look at these outcomes data that you have, and in general, when I look at hospital compare, I notice a lot of people in the high 90s on almost everything. I find that not so discriminating. And yesterday's panel on outcome quality, are those mainly self-report metrics that you have, or who retrieves those? Apparently, I didn't know that May is when we wallow in grain in the middle of it now. It occurred to me whether we could have a student self-report.
So this is data that the state already collects, and I think the one next step, and it's been mentioned many times today, is that I think we are on the road. We've already been able to start to use our all payer all claims database, and this is a huge step forward for us. So much of the data that we had that you even saw there, still, I mean, the state collects this. We actually then worked with our CCOs to make sure that we were we had the valid data, and it was published. But not like I know what you're referring to on from our hospital association when they put that is all self-reported, as opposed to what we have here is really goes through kind of the state filter first to make sure that it's validated.
So we're going to try something kind of complicated here. We're going to call it lightning round. I'm going to have four people ask their questions. That's probably all we're going to have time for, but I want those questions out there, and you'll answer them all. The four are Al Dobson, Rick Foster, Susan Dinser, and Sharon Levine. Go.
Hey, my question to the panel is, yesterday's first panel, it's like the stage didn't exist. You guys are up there looking at it from a slightly different perspective. Is there enough heft? What's going on in the States, and Dan is a CBO, I think you're a former CBO, as a scoring exercise, do you think there's enough heft on this panel and panels like this across the country to bend that cost curve with what you guys are doing?
Hold that thought, Rick.
Okay, Rick Foster, former CMS chief expert. I'm a big believer in state innovation, state experimentation. The designated curmudgeon rule that I often play looks at the past history and said states have been very innovative in figuring out ways to get more money from the federal government. I'll note that for the Oregon CCO waiver, the $1.9 billion, that's money that Medicaid will spend in Oregon, and we will further match with our FDAP. So it's really over $3 billion total. Now we calculated just roughly that it would take a 2% reduction in the growth rate each and every year by 8 years to pay that back. And this raises an obvious question from yesterday. What are you comparing the growth rate to? You all proposed 7% as a pre-innovation target. You accepted CMS's proposal of this nationwide Medicaid rate. But in practice, of course, it could happen that these various proposals and things you have wouldn't do anything, and you might still be a target that was sort of artificial. So I will confess a bit of a healthy skepticism about whether you can really knock down a growth rate by 2 percentage points for that many years in a row. My question is, what are you all doing to ensure that there's a good official question, but the arbitrary target, where are you at?
Very good. Susan?
So a question for Hani. Apropos of the point that a lot more goes into producing health and healthcare, and your responsibility on the board to come up with a unified plan, how are you going about assessing the non-healthcare related contributions to health and measuring those and figuring out how to express those in a budgetary sense?
This is rounding out nicely. Sharon?
The four of you representing state strategies, what have been your successful approaches to engaging physicians in believing that this is the right way to go, so that you've got collaborators rather than opposite?
I figured you'd ask the hardest question. Okay, let's go, Amy. You've got 4 minutes to do this. You start.
Okay, do we have enough heft? Despite what Stuart said, I think we only do as long as we're in sync with Medicare. On the question from Rick about Medicaid waivers and evaluation, first of all, I hate the Medicaid waiver process. I'm independent from the governor now, so I can say that. I think it's all a game, and I don't think that there's proper constraints on it either in terms of the cost expectations or the outcomes. So I think we need to do a lot of work there if we're going to use that process effectively going forward. In terms of evaluation, the SIM process imposes a lot of evaluation requirements on us. At least in Vermont, the problem there is how do you separate the effects of all the stuff that's going on? A lot of complexity that we're supposed to segregate out. And then a unified healthcare budget. So far, our approach has been how can we, much like with our rate setting authority, for me the starting point is get better data, because we've had really lousy data related to price variation. We now have better stuff. We're doing work just like Massachusetts on that front. And on the unified healthcare budget, we're trying to look at ways in which we can expand the scope of our expenditure analysis and the data that we look at on a regular basis to broaden the lens on what is healthcare and what's affecting healthcare costs and outcomes. Success in engaging physicians. Most of the physician engagement that's happening in Vermont, I would say, is happening through the private sector, through the ACO organization, and through the various efforts, and through the medical home, which has been a very effective organizing tool for physicians, for improving physician quality of life in particular. There are some other efforts that we've supported that are outside of that, that are kind of more leadership focused and getting physicians to be engaged in some of our policy endeavors, but most of the engagement is happening through the kind of private sector. What are they doing around delivery system reform themselves?
So I knew Anya would answer every question because she can actually remember all of them.
I thought
so
we were supposed to. Was that not my...
That's right. That's right. That's good. That's good. That's exactly right. So Mike, you got 1 minute. Say what the hell you want.
I thought you were talking about us.
Well, Rick kind of focused his question to me, I think, just on our upfront investment. I think your points are very valid. I think on the evaluation piece, you know, as we push this data out on a quarterly basis, I mean, you're really going to start to see the cost and utilization piece kind of up front. I mean, that's what we're going to have to pay attention to. I think that's where, when we start having conversations with states, you know, they look at that 1.9 and think this is great, but then when you start to talk about the accountability, yeah, I mean, this is a much bigger step that not every state really wants to enter into right now. But I think, you know, as we monitor this on a quarterly basis, that's our hope, that we can start to drive that change.
Dan, 1 minute.
Well, I think for both Al and Rick, I know this as well as most of you, but trying to establish baselines here is really tricky business. We don't have as good of research as we think we do in many cases. We don't know what the counterfactual really looks like. We have to make it up. And so one way of making it up may be better than another, but there's still a lot of speculation involved, even for the short run. So it is hard, but it's hard in almost every case that we think about. And there's a lot of parallels between healthcare and education, for example. And start with, every doc can't be measured because their patients are different. No teachers can be measured because their students are different. Every hospital administrator thinks their costs are fixed, even though it's mostly personnel. Every college administrator thinks their costs are fixed, even though it's mostly personnel. everywhere you look, there are tough measurement issues, but sometimes we aren't going to have the time to do what we'd like to do, you know, controlled experiments, all those great things, and we're going to have to figure out another way, essentially, to test some of these models so we can replicate them more quickly. And that means we're going to have to put dollar signs on them, even though, as Rick noted, sometimes it's hard to know exactly the value of the intervention. But we're going to have to take some leaps of faith and figure out other ways to measure. We can't wait 10 years to evaluate the outcomes of some of these experiments.
Heather.
Rick's right that states are very innovative when it comes to maximizing bringing home federal Medicaid dollars. So even hearing about this NGA working group, which is great, but it's about how can states use that leverage with the feds, right? And the feds, and they're at this wonderful moment where the states are realizing how much leverage they have with the feds. So I think that's what we want to watch is how that plays out and how much that flexibility gets expanded.
Stuart, last word.
Last word. So, you know, I was a dyed-in-the-wool Fed. I didn't even know we had states. I think Len's original chart is where I'm coming out. With all due respect for many of us who spend our lives in Washington, you've done your job, and now it's going to, you know, to Al Dobson's question, the changes that are going to take place, whether they're good or bad or work or not, are going to be done much more at the state level than the federal level. And the fact that the federal government is flying off, like whatever the analogy is, whatever they're flying off of, if we're going to bend that curve, that first chart, it's going to be because of the activities that the group here